Welcome to Medicus, a student-run podcast about any and all things in the world of medicine. Follow along as we interview outstanding individuals about important topics in healthcare. Hi, guys, and welcome back to Medicus. In this new mini-series, we talked to individuals who took a detour in medical school and did not stick to the traditional four-year curriculum. We hope that this series will shed a light on various reasons students have to adjust their trajectory, normalize how common this phenomenon is, and reduce the stigma associated with taking more time to get through medical school than allotted. So today, our first guest is David Mata, who is now an intern. And so, David, nice to have you here. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners, touching on your education and decision to pursue medicine and your future career aspirations?
Absolutely. Hi, everyone. My name is David Mata. I am an intern at UC San Diego in family medicine. My trajectory, I guess, through medical school is I took an extra year after my first year to basically remediate a course. And so I had to have a whole year, basically, of a leave of absence. And after I finished my little gap year there, I finished my 3 years of medical school that were remaining. And here we are. So as far as why I went into medicine, I come from a family of immigrants. So navigating the system as an immigrant, I think it was really difficult and in a different language. So I kind of had to navigate that with my parents at a very young age. And I got to see a lot of disparities growing up. And then I pursued public health for 5 years prior to medical school, which opened up kind of a different perspective in medicine and a perspective that I'm very thankful for, because I think I romanticized medicine a little bit prior to public health. And I think public health showed me that it's not all roses and beautiful things, but, you know, it's very complicated. And I think public health really put a perspective on the challenges of patients and communities, especially those that are marginalized. And I think it sparked in me an interest to be a community doctor, to be a primary care doctor, and kind of alleviate these disparities that exist in these communities. And I thought it was well suited for them. And so I decided to pursue the family medicine trajectory. And here we are, UC San Diego Family Medicine.
That's amazing. And I'm so glad to see your smiling face in the sunny state of California, where you couples matched with your partner, which is so exciting, at a great institution, despite, or maybe because, you know, of the different route that you took through medical school. So you mentioned that you had to remediate a course after your first year. So can you just expand more about that? You know, how did you address and overcome this hurdle?
Yeah, so I think it's important to like address my background a little bit to kind of shed some context and, you know, kind of the challenge that I had as I was starting med school. It's interesting because one of the questions I remember during my interview for med school was, you know, what is the challenge that you anticipate, you know, if you were to get accepted? And I responded, it's been a while. I was 28 at the time, and I had gone to grad school. I graduated in 2013. So it had been maybe about 5 years since I went to, you know, a higher education institution with a rigorous education program. And so I was nervous, you know, reasonably. I hadn't studied in a while. I was in the workforce, and, you know, adult learning is a challenge, I think, for everyone. And so I knew that going into medical school. So I tried to prepare as best I could. I used old techniques that I kind of have used that were successful to me in the past, and quickly learned that, you know, those techniques were a little outdated. And so I had to relearn how to be a student again. And it took me, unfortunately, a course to kind of figure that out, and a remediation exam for that matter. And so, you know, I didn't pass the remediation exam, which there's, I think, a different conversation alluding to remediation policy. But I think after I finished the exam, I didn't pass it. And so at Loyola, what you do is you remediate the course the following year. And then I passed that, thankfully, with flying colors. And then you have to take a leave of absence for the rest of the year. So it's kind of up to the student on how you decide to fill up that year. And then you just start off with the next cohort. So that was kind of my journey and how I managed to conquer it all, I think, is seek out the right resources. I relied a lot on my colleagues, on my classmates, you know, that were doing well, like you, your handful notes. And I think having the right mentorship as you start medical school is super important. And seeing how other people learn, I think, was super important to me and kind of fixing my lack of skills and to succeed in medical school. So I think learning from my classmates, seeing what techniques they used, following the guidance of our academic advisors, I think being open-minded to all these new ways and concepts was really valuable to me, because if I was rigid in my own ways, I don't think I would have succeeded as well as I did. Relying on the guidance, being open-minded, and working hard. There's no way around it but working hard.
Sure. And what did you say you spent the rest of the year doing after you finished your course?
Yeah, I was very lucky. So as I was finishing the course, Northwestern had a fellowship that had just been approved to do like a research year. And so myself with other students who were in a similar position that I was in, we were all able to qualify for that fellowship. So we did that for the rest of the year. I managed to publish 2 papers, 2 abstracts, one of which I just presented in Montreal, Canada. And, you know, it was a huge blessing in disguise. And I think the research experience was really invaluable to me. And it's something that I still continue doing. So I'm really thankful I found that opportunity. And I also was an intern at the AMA, American Medical Association, where I did some reports for them, which was also an incredible experience. And I was also an intern at the Medical Organization for Latino Advancement, which also provided me with this additional skill. So I stayed busy.
It sounds like you had a full packed year, even though you didn't have a full load of classes. But honestly, it seems like you were able to really utilize this year to its maximum potential, right? Medical students, I think, who do take the 4-year track wouldn't have the time to have all of these amazing experiences and fit them in. And obviously, that's probably part of the reason that UCSD chose you as one of their new residents, because of all of this experience you bring in different facets of medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. It was definitely a big topic of discussion during my residency interviews. Like, what did I occupy my time with? And you know, surprisingly, not a lot of residencies fixated on this class. Most programs were interested in hearing about, like, oh, what happened? And why didn't you pass this class? And, you know, not making it a bigger deal than it needed to be. Mm-hmm. And they more so focused on, like, you know, what did you learn from it? How did this make you a better student? And, you know, just more academically prepared. And what did you do in that time? I think that was like the biggest question. Like, what did you do during that? And how did you stay busy? How did you develop yourself further during that year? And, you know, thankfully, I had all those things to talk about. And so it worked out really well. And it worked in my favor, without a doubt.
Excellent. So what do you think was the biggest challenge you faced in, quote unquote, getting back on track?
Yeah. So I think the hardest is definitely the stigma. You know, it's something that I even talked about today with my attending, because I told her I had this podcast and I told her, you know, what it was about. And I still could feel that like stigma telling her, you know, hey, I didn't pass this class and I'm here talking about it. And I still feel it even as a resident, even though I matched, even though I have a job, you know, you still feel the stigma of like, man, I failed. And I try to shift that language and I try to kind of be gentle with myself as well and remind myself that the system isn't built for everyone and not everyone is going to succeed in the same way. And I think being more gentle with myself and realizing, hey, I did everything that I could and here I am at a very good program that I'm very happy at. And at the end of the day, that's what matters. And it gets really tough to kind of shut down those voices in the back of your mind, like, that you're not enough, that you're not smart, that you don't belong here. Right. And it's really hard to put that aside some days. And I'm not going to lie, some days are easier than others. To me, that was the hardest part. But I think that experience, I personally think that the more you talk about a personal challenge, the more open you are about something you've endured that is difficult, the better you can cope with it. And this is with not exclusive to remediation or not passing a class or not passing a test. Anything in your life that you've encountered that you talk about openly, not only do you educate other people about your experience and they learn that way, because I think there is nothing stronger than your own story.
Yeah.
There's a lot of power in your story for your own wellness. I think that's super important, because you're letting the demons out, per se. Like, you're letting that out into the open. Mm-hmm. And you're taking the power away from those negative experiences. And again, it's not always easy, but I think me being open about it definitely helped mitigate a lot of that stigma. And I think just what goes along with the logistical challenges of not passing a class at Loyola, you know, you have to be part of a new cohort. When you are part of a new cohort, you have to explain, like, who is this guy? And
right.
Where did you come from? And, you know, what happened? So then inevitably, you have to start telling your story, you know? So mm-hmm. even for people that aren't as open about their life, we're kind of forced to tell our story regardless. So we're kind of put in a corner. And so it's tough. And I think we're in a high functioning, high caliber career where a lot is expected out of us and we're expected to perform in a certain way. And these pressures make it really difficult to talk about these things. And one reason why I was happy that I talked about it was because even attendings would come up to me and say, hey, I didn't pass that class. I didn't pass this test. I didn't do this. I didn't do that. And they were being open about their challenges, which made me feel so much better. It's like, wow, I don't want to disclose names, but I would have chairs from institutions telling me that the same thing had happened to them. And so we are definitely not alone and we're definitely not the only ones. And I think being more open about that, you'll see that people will be willing to open up with you and break down the stigma that is so present.
I definitely agree with you. I think especially because I feel like to a certain degree, you're better off than maybe someone who got it on their first try because you learned how to learn, right? And I think that's something that can be sometimes taken for granted, to be able to become so adaptable and understanding, like sitting down with yourself and critically evaluating, you know, your study mm-hmm. strategies and again, being honest with yourself in terms of what works and what doesn't and reevaluating. And I think that's a quality that physicians really need to have is this adaptability, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think you are off to be a wonderful physician. I would gladly have you as my doctor, especially if I move out to California for residency. Yeah. Who knows, you know?
Yes, let's go.
But what would you like to recommend to someone who may be in a position that you were in?
Yeah, it's interesting you asked me that question because I remember approaching a student that also had just learned this, like literally seconds after, you know, they got the news that they didn't pass a specific course. And I remember going up to them and I remember thinking to myself, like, what did I need to hear at that moment? And I remember telling myself, like, it's going to be okay. We're going to match. We are not alone in this. Or there's other people experiencing these same things. We are not the only ones. This has happened to people in every year and it will continue to happen. And, you know, we're going to get through it. I look back at, you know, all the students that were in that cohort with me who didn't pass a course, and all of us have matched. All of us yeah. are at our programming. All of us are doing incredible things in every specialty, OB-GYN, surgery, family medicine, internal medicine. We're all in different fields doing really great things. And I think I would tell the student, it's really scary right now. You're going to go through all of these not pleasant feelings, and I'm not going to say that they're going to go away, but they definitely will get better with time, and to be gentle with themselves and to just get the appropriate resources and help that you need to kind of get over this hump.
Yeah. Thanks for that. And what would you want our listeners who are largely pre-medical and medical students to know about extending their medical education?
Yeah, I think it's becoming, just in general, even if you don't pass a class or a test, I think it's becoming a lot more common to take this gap year.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you are doing great, a research career is fantastic to kind of build up a CV if that's something that you want to use to build up your CV for whatever specialty you want to do, for whatever work that you want to do. It doesn't even have to be a research year. It can be a service year. It can be a, I don't know, whatever year you want it to be. Just doing something that fulfills you and fulfills maybe your career, I think, is completely okay, even if it's just for wellness. And that's completely okay, too. And as far as pre-medical students go, the journey is long, and, you know, I'm 34 right now, and some of my colleagues are much younger. I'm the oldest one in my cohort, and the atypical journey isn't just in medical school. It's also before med school. And, you know, I graduated college in 2010, mm-hmm. and I didn't start med school until 2018. You know, that's 8 years that I kind of had to pursue things that I wanted to pursue, and I'm really happy I did. You know, and I traveled the world. I did research. I did all these wonderful things, and I'm forever thankful for that. Like my mom always tells me, no hay prisa, which means there's no need to hurry up things. Mm-hmm. I remember my mom telling me, why are you such a rush to not have a life? And it's advice that sticks with me. It teaches me to stay present. And to everyone listening, you know, there's no shame in taking a typical journey that's longer than expected. When we're trying to pursue medicine or any professional career, we want to get it done. We want to get there now. And we want to be there. And I think we forget to be present. We forget to acknowledge that this is not the end all be all.
Yeah.
And I encourage everyone to take their time and be gentle with themselves and their own journeys and own challenges. The time will come when it comes, and just let life take the lead.
Well, thank you for that beautiful advice, Dr. Mata. Really great to say that. You know, I've known you for the last 5 years, and truly, you're a remarkable human being. And like I said, your future patients are lucky to have you. Thank you for your time tonight.
Oh, thank you so much, Rasta. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode. This wouldn't be possible without the support from our listeners. Please rate, review, and subscribe. We appreciate donations to help fund the production of this podcast. To support us, go to medicuspodcast.com, where you can additionally find show notes, links, and information about our guests. We are at Medicus Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. If you have any questions, comments, or episode suggestions, please submit them on our website. This podcast is intended for general information purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine. No patient-doctor relation is formed, and the content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Views and opinions are their own and do not represent any organization.